Welcome to the Food Founders interview from Procop. We've got something a bit different this time, as I'm speaking to Chris Tunstall, founder of A Bar Above. Based in San Francisco, Chris is a former bartender with a degree in microbiology and a long-standing love of craft cocktails. A Bar Above is a team of cocktail nerds, their words, not mine, who help hospitality, businesses, and home enthusiasts understand the art and science of cocktail making. I'm looking forward to finding out what's going on in the craft cocktail scene in the US, the flavors and formats that are working out there. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited for this conversation.
Excellent. I guess the first question really is, can you tell me a bit about A Bar Above, what it does, and why you started the business?
Yeah, absolutely. So A Bar Above is kind of a small team. It's me and my wife started this company back in 2013. And A Bar Above really started with the whole craft cocktail movement. So back in like 2003 is when I first started attending bar. And I started hearing about mixology for the very first time. People often use the word craft cocktails now, but it's kind of the same word, just kind of wrapped in a different wrapper. And it was brand new. In my opinion, kind of when I was starting to notice it, there was only two places, probably three actually, London, two places in the United States where people were having really kind of deep conversations about cocktails and ingredients and technique. And it was in San Francisco and New York. And of course, London, like I said. So people were having these conversations in these forums, and you could count the number of people having these conversations on both hands. There was five here in San Francisco, five in New York, and there wasn't a lot of people really interested or talking about it. And just kind of context of kind of where we were in the landscape of cocktails, up to this point, everything was sweet and sour. Everything was pre-manufactured. Everything came out of a gun. So there wasn't really a focus on quality. It was always a focus on quantity, both from an alcohol consumption and just pure volume. So in 2003 and much earlier than that, there were a handful of people that started to switch over to quality, high ingredients, taking it back down to like the 1800s of like, you are making all of your ingredients. And that is really what fascinated me. So I started paying attention to kind of that world. And it slowly started to evolve. We started learning more techniques. And I knew that if I wanted to be taken seriously, I needed to move into San Francisco. And I was up in Napa and Sonoma at the time in wine country. So after, you know, managing bar programs for a couple of years, probably 3 or 4 years at this point, I thought I kind of was very solid in my understanding of bartending techniques and everything. I moved to San Francisco and I quickly realized how little I knew. So I started, you know, trying to get a job and I couldn't get a job there. Finally was able to get a job bartending, quickly understood that I didn't know what I was doing. So much so that like people asked me to make an old fashioned and I would make it. And then they would criticize me for not knowing how to make a proper old fashioned. But at that time there was a lot of ego and a lot of like, protection around your recipes. So they would criticize you, but they would never teach you the proper way to do it or the reasons why.
Oh, the people criticize the bar owners or the bartenders sort of thing.
Exactly. So there was a lot of just infighting in the community and there was a lot of ego involved. And this is where the term mixology kind of got a really negative connotation in our industry. So I found it really off-putting and I've always been somebody to kind of collaborate and share. So that's kind of the genesis of A Bar Above is we started off with education, teaching people kind of those finer points, kind of the cutting edge of mixology that we could see at that time in San Francisco and sharing it to the rest of the world. So it really was kind of the beginning of this whole cocktail movement. And we were one of the very first on YouTube to really kind of lean in and communicate these techniques to people that were in these major cities. So we started off with education. I spent 6 months building a bar. My wife spent 6 months learning how to code and put a website together.
Oh, wow.
And the rest was history. We started filming pretty much every week, launched our first digital product in 2014, which is still one of our most recognized courses online right now, the mixology certification. And then through that kind of experience and adventure, you know, we started podcasts, we started Facebook groups. We kind of were everywhere that we could possibly be from the digital perspective. And we kept getting the same questions of what barware do you guys recommend? And at that time, there were a couple of big players, but I had a lot of frustration with some of the tools falling apart. not a lot of great customer service. And for a hospitality focused kind of tools company, they didn't offer a lot of hospitality to the hospitality professionals. At that point, we said, okay, let's lean in, let's kind of do our own thing and launch our first products on Amazon in, I want to say, 2015. So we took our last bit of life savings that we had stored up, poured it into the first round of hardware, you know, waited 3 months for it to show up from China, and we sold out in 30 days.
Hey.
So then we kind of just rinse, repeat, kind of recycled all of our money as fast as we made it. We spent twice as much and kind of went from there. And, you know, here we are in 2025. We've been doing this for a little over 10 years now. And it's been quite a journey, but we really do focus primarily on education and making hardware and bar equipment that may look like everybody else, but is higher quality, more durable, and addresses a lot of the issues that I had when I was attending bar.
The mixology courses, are you targeting people who work in hospitality and bars, as well as kind of end home enthusiasts, or, and has that changed over time?
Primarily, yes, it has changed over time. When we first launched, I was industry. I was always in the hot restaurants and bars. So that's what I knew. That's what I spoke. That's what I talked to. And even the language that we used on our marketing side was very industry focused. And we decided, when we started taking a look at actually who's buying our products, it was mostly home enthusiasts. So we started to change our language up and started to really kind of focus more on the D2C market. Right before COVID, oddly enough. And then that's kind of where we have found our main success. But even at the beginning, I always thought, you know, if we are an industry-focused brand, you know, there's our people that really, enthusiasts that really focus in on what industry is using.
I imagine COVID was actually good for your business in terms of people kind of engaging online and ordering online.
For COVID, for us, it was incredible. It was a rapid growth scenario for us. We went from a team of me and my wife to hiring our first couple of people and then just really kind of ramping up the business very quickly. And we were one of the only manufacturers that actually had stock because of the relationships that we had.
I imagine there was a spike, but it's actually sustained, the growth is sustained after COVID.
Yeah, and this is something that we've seen with a lot of other brands too, that we definitely got the spike. We hired accordingly, thinking that was a trajectory that we were heading. But then, like many companies, we saw that kind of decline because people, myself included, want to start traveling. We want to start seeing our friends. We want to start going out. So we definitely saw kind of a normalization in that growth curve, but nothing that was, you know, shocking by any means for us. Yeah.
And what were you doing before you started the business? You always in bars, beverages, hospitalities? You've always been an alcohol enthusiast?
No, not actually. So I had a kind of a long pathway to get here. I was in college and taking molecular biology. That was my focus. So it was always, my head was always in science. I always thought I would work in that industry. Food science was never even a consideration for me. But I found myself more and more attracted to the culinary side of things. I almost went to culinary school when I was 18. I would sleep with, you know, cookbooks, Julia Child's cookbooks, you name it. And I was reading it cover to cover. So I was kind of into that. But I also moved to Vegas back in 95. And one of the things I always enjoyed is, like, if I am in a famous city, I'm going to participate in a market that is, that city is famous for. So Vegas is very, very famous for gambling. So I decided that I want to kind of like really kind of immerse myself in the whole Vegas experience. So I became a limo driver and a croupier, a craps dealer. And I did that for about 3 years. And I love the excitement. And I love just the energy around a craps dealer. For anybody that's unfamiliar, it's the dice game. When you throw it down the table, there's a bunch of people around you and like James Bond, everybody like loses their mind and it's very exciting. But then I decided that I didn't want to do that long term. So I moved to San Francisco, decided to replace that excitement with bartending. And that's really what kind of set the hook. And after that, I was in the business for 15 years, mostly managing bar programs while learning all these cutting edge techniques that we talked about earlier, flavor manipulation, flavor delivery, you know, extractions, all the culinary side of cocktails.
Was molecular biology useful in that context, or am I clutching at straws?
Actually, it really is. It's incredible how often I use it. And it's not like deep science, but it is like basic science. Things like equilibrium. You know, if you have 5 pounds of fruit versus 10 pounds of fruit, there's an equilibrium state on that flavor in those ingredients, as well as just food health, like bacterial growth and stemming that, surface area, dissipation, heat, energy, all those little things have definitely come into play when I go to either create menus or create products. I actually use that a lot in product design and thinking about product design as well.
Can you give me a flavor of some of the different types of customer you have, what they're looking for, and I guess a sense of how many people you think are kind of making cocktails or craft cocktails and high quality cocktails at home?
It is quite a large market, actually. It is a very, very growing industry. And I think even with non-alcoholic, it becomes even more important because there isn't a lot of knowledge base around how to apply a lot of this to non-alcoholic ingredients. So there is a lot of people that are very interested that don't have the understanding and the knowledge. And that's kind of where we really start to shine.
What's currently in the range and how do you decide what products to bring to market?
Yeah, so when we first started off, we were very much an education and a media company. So a lot of our focus was on generating video assets and kind of creating courses and stuff. So like I mentioned, the mixology certification was kind of this, you know, the white whale of products that I wanted to design and come up with. The original idea was, this is how old I am and how long ago we were discussing this business, was to do a DVD box set. And to send those DVDs out into the world, because that's what I was used to in the world of flair, or the juggling of bottles and stuff.
Yeah.
That was kind of how they went to market. And so I said, okay, there's a model here. Let's just replicate that model. And my lovely wife is much more intelligent and definitely more attractive than me. And she said, oh, no, we're not going to do that. And I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? She goes, no, we're not doing that. We're going to give it away for free. And like, are you insane? And she goes, no, it's a great marketing channel. And I didn't understand a lot about business and marketing at this point. And it was the best decision we made. So we launched our YouTube channel in 2013, started developing the course in 2014. And it took an entire year of developing that specific course. And for anybody that's interested, it's a 9-week course. We isolate every single variable that goes into any cocktail. So acid, we talk about all the common acids, lemon, lime, pineapple, cranberry, orange juice that you put in there. We analyze the pH. We analyze the sugar content. This is where the science background comes in. And we show how it impacts flavor. Then we go down the next layer and say, okay, these are the common acids that you use. But a lemon isn't a lemon. A lemon is one specific lemon that has been common, but there are many varieties of lemon. So then we talk about the different varietals of all the fruits we just talked about, the different pH, the different flavor, the different acids of all of those varieties. Then we go down another layer and say, okay, those are common varietals now, or varietals that you can use, but also what are some of the other kind of uncommon acids, like verjus? Verjus is a very uncommon. It's, you know, when they pull vineyards in the beginning of like spring and summer, all those green grapes have a very high acid content. And this is one of those vinegars and acidifying agents that you'll find in French cooking for like salad dressings and stuff. It's got a very, very high pH. So then we start going down that road of like pH, acid, flavor. And then we take it one layer more and say, okay, refined acids, or what I call refined acids, like malic acid, tartaric acid, citric acid. And how can you put those together to really start to refine the flavors that you're looking for and replicate them, but add additional flavors? So imagine taking a red wine, acidifying it, so it has the same flavor profile and pH as lemon, but now you can replace that in cocktails. So we go down as deep as we can go in every 9 of those different categories, and then wrap it all up and say, okay, now that we've identified that, here's how you put it all together, and here's how you start to manipulate through culinary technique on how to come up with your own recipes and stuff. So it is a very, very dense course, but it really gives you the structure of cocktails and cocktail development And then, so that was kind of our first course. We've done a lot of other courses, but nothing as deep as that. Everything from making your own flavorful syrups, making your own infusions. And once again, we go down that kind of deep trajectory to even how to make your own non-alcoholic cocktail replacements. So instead of buying rum, you can make your own rum and how to do it. So we try to give you the frame, anybody a framework, and then kind of spur their imagination to see how, what they can come up with, how they manipulate things using kind of a similar profile, and let them just kind of play in the sandbox of flavor and development and coming together with cocktails. On the physical stuff, the cocktail shakers and stuff, we're in constant development. So we have everything you'll basically need to come up, create cocktails at home or in a restaurant environment. And we're always adding stuff into our lineup, different colors, which are all dishwasher safe. And we do our own unique twists. So anything that may look like your average bar tool, there's always a secret about what we launch that makes it a little bit different. And once we start to talk about it, you'll be like, oh, okay, why doesn't anybody else do this? And so that's kind of our secret sauce when it comes to development.
Brilliant. I know over the time you've been running the Bar Above, have there been sort of significant changes in the, you know, the tastes, the habits, the flavors that people are looking for and want to incorporate?
It's incredible since I've started to where we are at now. Just the general population and the understanding of cocktails and the palate has changed so immensely. It's absolutely incredible. We went from a very sugar bomb cocktail, you know, very focused on delivering sweetness and weight to the palate. And we're adding a lot more complexity into the cocktail world. Things like Amari, like that bittersweet Italian liqueurs have become a basic staple of our world now. And we are constantly expanding wherever we can. And it's one of those things that I always say, there's no sacred ingredient in the world of cocktails. If you tell me to make a cocktail out of any ingredient, I'm going to try to work it into a cocktail, you know, even if it's a vintage wine. I will try to do it justice, but I'm not even going to hesitate to open like a 1974 Bordeaux, for example, and make something really fun out of it. But yeah, the flavor profiles and kind of the way people are exploring cocktails, even in the general public, has changed considerably since we started. Like even smoke, the idea of smoke in cocktails has become commonplace now. And that was like very like, whoa, what are you guys doing? Like even 5 years ago, it was pretty incredible to see how people adapt and change so quickly.
And are there any hot or emerging trends you can share from the USA?
Non-alcoholic cocktails are absolutely blowing up. This is something that we're seeing and something that I love personally. It is changing the marketplace. You know, there are so many new products on the shelves now that are trying to really kind of capture this space. But it's something I absolutely love and I think is incredible. I think there is a lot of challenge in being in that space just from analogous kind of words. So, for example, if I'm making a non-alcoholic bourbon, I already have a preconceived notion in my head of what that's going to taste like from a consumer perspective.
Yeah.
And usually that translation into a non-alcoholic is a considerable jump from a flavor and palate perspective. And there's not been a lot of companies, I think, that are really starting to lean in and nail these flavor combinations. They're getting closer, but I think that's the biggest struggle that we're having in the industry right now is getting that kind of conversation changing. I know there's a couple of people that have kind of jumped over and just said, we're not going to make alcohol equivalents and name them alcohol equivalents. We're going to do our own spins. Like I think Seedlip is one that does a really good job on that, where they don't say this is our non-alcoholic gin, but they craft those flavors to be gin capable.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good way. And I think the other thing that I usually tell people, especially in the non-alcoholic space, is it might not make sense to just replace the gin in your, you know, Ricky or something like that. It might make more sense from a producer perspective to make the gin Ricky, right? In a can, pre-made, pre-bottled, because you have so much more volume to manipulate flavors and really start to dial in those flavors versus making something that's already, you know, packaged as a distilled substitute and then let the consumer have that at the end. So I think pre-packaged RTDs in the non-alcoholic space, it just makes a lot more sense to me. And I think that's where we're starting to see a lot of companies kind of really lean into that space as well.
So the other thing we need to talk about is the fact that you're 200 plus episodes deep into the Bar Above podcast. How did that come about? How has it helped the business? And what are your feelings about this podcasting lark?
So podcasting is a really interesting animal. And we started podcasting back in 2014, maybe 15, I think. And we recorded a handful of episodes and we immediately threw them away because they were so bad. And I recommend anybody starting a podcast, do that. Record a couple, get your experience up a little bit, get your voice, you know, right for podcasting, and then just throw them away and then start over. And I promise you they will get better. But from our perspective, it was a great way to add even more for our audience because there's something very valuable about just being in somebody's ears, right? Over and over and over and over again. It builds trust, it builds recognition, and it builds kind of a story with a brand. You know, we can go on a tangent that we just can't do in Facebook or on YouTube. You know, this gives us the ability to kind of really have a different conversation, have a different focus, where YouTube is mostly education. This could be more topical. This could be very different conversation. So a lot of the podcast was about supporting bartenders. How do you build your own business as a bartender? We did an entire series around that. How to get a better job. So we're doing much more like lifestyle conversations around the industry, but also, you know, maybe we do a little bit of experimenting on history of cocktails and, you know, bringing the consumer into those conversations as well. I think for us, we thought it was way too late to get into podcasting in 2014. but we were very, very surprised. And with our space, it's amazing how many people just have given up after 10 episodes. So we were probably one of the longer podcasts, which is really helpful. But I think lead generation, brand awareness is a huge play for us. The other thing, and this is a thing that I think is much more subtle with podcasting, is network building. So if you are in, you know, we're in a really cool space where it's a lot of fun, a lot of personalities, a lot of different people that we can talk to. And now we just expanded our network exponentially, right? So at the end of an episode, I'll ask them like, hey, this was a lot of fun. Who do you think I should reach out to? And then they'll say, oh, you got to reach out to this person, man. He's super good about this and you'll love him. And then I'll ask for an introduction. So you can really expand out your network. And I think the other thing that I realized later on in the podcast world is aim for the top. If you're going to get a guest, go to the top of the chain. And you'll be surprised how many people say yes. It's a great, great builder of reputation, networking, leads. And with us, you'll never know where it takes you, but you're going to learn a lot along the way. And you'll be surprised, honestly. It's an incredible platform.
Where would you like the business to be over the next sort of few years?
So we have a pretty clear path of what we want to accomplish. We have built this company not to be kind of a flash in the pan company. We're not trying to get acquired. This is all self-funded. We are looking to be a legacy company that lasts many, many years. So that is our growth trajectory. I think retail is going to be an area that we really lean in on the next 5 years. And I think what we would need to do as a brand and where we really focus is bridging that gap between bar tools and education and providing a great resource for anybody that's interested in learning more about craft cocktails, giving them all the information they need to get started, to really kind of like spark that curiosity for them to start exploring the world of craft cocktails.
Do you work as a consultant to sort of drinks businesses or anyone like that?
So I've done a lot of consulting for bars and restaurants. I think I've been over 100 different bars and restaurants for consulting. As far as the beverage side, I've never done that personally. It's something I've always been interested in on, but I don't bring the food science background. I can do flavor manipulation, and really dialing flavor in from that perspective. I don't have that technical background to bring an idea to market. And I think that I would find that to be a disservice if I'm talking about being a beverage consultant, if I don't know that pathway. Okay. From a flavor point of view, I could definitely help out. Never done it. Always happy to try new things. It's something I absolutely love. You know, one of the things that we have found over our courses is last year we launched our flavor manipulation courses, where we did a very deep dive into syrups, infusions, and bitters and tinctures. And the focus that we had was how does flavor show up differently if you apply these different techniques? And we kept three flavors constant through the entire series. So one of the things that we notice is when you have a syrup, that flavor hits immediately. It is big, it's powerful, it's bold, it's big and round, right in the front palate, right? When we do infusions, you could stretch that flavor development out over a longer period of time. Yeah. So that strawberry that hits with a syrup is big strawberry. Bam, it's right in your face. But when you do an infusion, it's much more subtle. The fragrance would show up more. The flavor of strawberry doesn't come in until later on the palate. And then with bitters and tincture, it is that bridge between your syrups and your infusions. And it kind of gives you these giant kind of spikes that you can start to engineer from a flavor development perspective. And once you start weaving all of these things together, that's where you get complexity. That's where you get nuance. That's where you get some really, really cool things. And I think that's where there's nobody teaching this kind of stuff, in my opinion, unless you go to food science. But for an average bar, an average cocktail enthusiast, these are the things that we explore through our courses that you're not going to find on YouTube. You're not going to find in a book unless you go to college somewhere. So that's kind of the lane that we sit in and where we really have a lot of fun.
I always ask people this. What are the most important things you've learned? If you could go back in time to some point earlier in the business, what do you wish you could tell yourself that would have saved, I don't know, pain, frustration, cost, or missed opportunity?
Oh, so many things. The lessons learned of owning your own business over a decade. I think having a clear trajectory of where you want to go and what you want to do has to be crystal clear. Like, that's going to save you so much frustration. You know, I think we have kind of changed our vision a couple of times, and it's definitely gotten in the way of our growth. I think the other thing is be very strategic on the roadmap that you see in front of you, right? So work from the back all the way to the front, get everything lined up, and have a very clear roadmap of your growth path. Find the right people to talk to that are qualified. I think we have spent a lot of money on consultants. At the time, they were what we thought was right for the business, but they weren't, unfortunately, the right people that we should have talked to. So getting, I think, the right people involved in your business at the right time is really helpful. Don't blow up on payroll. I think that's one of the growth that we did through COVID. We have a great team, but hiring the right people at the right time is definitely one of those things that just you have to be very mindful of. And meet as many people as you possibly can and network with them. Build relationships with other business owners. Get advice. Like, talk to people that are in the same industry you are. If you can find a group that really kind of caters to that and has a platform that is open and honest and you can share information, even if it isn't specific to food engineering or product, just having other entrepreneurs that you can bounce ideas off of, ask for recommendations, packaging, branding, marketing, sales, all these things, without a great network of entrepreneurs, it could be really limiting in your business. So get out there and just, network as much as possible and just be a valuable resource to other people as well. And it will come back to you for sure.
So I guess my last question is, who should I reach out to? Who would be an interesting person?
So I think from my perspective, this podcast is mostly around food products and getting things to market. There is one lady we met in San Diego, and her name escapes me right now. But she is fascinating. So she started off with a food manufacturer. I think she started with co-packing, co-manufacturing. And You know, she started with one, got her product up and running, and then became, I think she's a co-man now for a bunch of different companies and brands and stuff like that. She's fascinating, lovely person. I'll have to get her name, and I'd be happy to reach out and connect with the both of you.
Thanks for sharing all that, Chris. Much appreciated. If you want to find out more about A Bar Above, their courses and products, go to www.abarabove.com. To hear more food founders share their experiences, go to froghop.co.uk/podcasts.